coming up on this week's mini episode of the Drew Perowit Podcast.
If you are drinking fluoridated water, if you're a mom, if you're pregnant, if your infant is drinking water or getting formula being made with fluoridated water, then the IQ of your child will drop by between five and nine points.
Hi, everyone. It's Drew. There are so many reasons that time and time again, I recommend magnesium to my friends and family and use it myself every single night. But the catch is, it's got to be a high-quality magnesium. That's why I recommend Magnesium Breakthrough from Bio-Optimizers. Magnesium is actually needed for over 600 enzymatic reactions in your body. In fact, every single cell contains it and needs it to function. It's essential for stress management and restful sleep because of its influence on neurotransmitters. It supports insulin sensitivity and fights the risk of type 2 diabetes. And magnesium also reduces C-reactive protein and many other markers of inflammation, along with so many more powerful functions that elevate our overall health. I personally started taking magnesium to help me with my sleep, especially when I travel, and it's been a game changer. But Magnesium Breakthrough from Bio-Optimizers really stands out from other magnesium supplements out there. It contains seven different forms of magnesium, which all have different functions in the body. I haven't found anything else like it on the market. And by the way, Bio-Optimizers is great because all their products are soy-free, gluten-free, lactose-free, non-GMO, free of chemicals and fillers, and made with all natural ingredients. For the entire month of November, Bio-Optimizers is having a Black Friday Cyber Monday blowout sale on their best-selling Magnesium Breakthrough. If you've ever been curious about supplementing magnesium, this is the time to start. You'll get up to 10% off every order and access to over $200 in free gifts like books and some other great products that they have. Just head over to magbreakthrough.com/Drew with the code Drew10. That's magbreakthrough, magbreakthrough.com/DHRU with the code DHRU10. That's Drew10 to check out their sale. Have you ever gone to your doctor for your normal annual physical, and after sitting with them for 10 minutes, they quickly look at your labs and tell you, hey, everything looks normal. Keep it up and I'll see you again next year. Maybe even give you a nice little pat on the back. I can't tell you how many listeners of the podcast have told me that they've had this exact experience and how honestly, how frustrating it can be. Now, we all know that normal isn't always optimal. Just because something's not wrong doesn't mean that we feel great. So traditional medicine is great at finding out when something is blatantly wrong, but they don't always do the best job when we need to highlight how we can do better. So what if you could get detailed nutritional and lifestyle guidance based on your individual needs? That's what Inside Tracker does. Inside Tracker was founded in 2009 by top scientists from acclaimed universities in the field of aging, genetics, and biometrics. Its mission is to help people live long, healthy, productive lives by optimizing their bodies from the inside out. Inside Tracker is cutting-edge technology, and it looks at your blood, DNA, lifestyle, and it has fitness tracker data. And they give you science-backed recommendations for positive changes to your daily habits. It's all about the daily habits. With their app, you can track your progress every day, and they have an amazing support team to help you with any questions you might have. Inside Tracker looks at everything from metabolic and inflammatory markers to top nutrients and hormones. It even tests your cholesterol levels to help you better manage stress. And you have the option to see how your inner age compares to your chronological age. Traditional lab tests can be hard to read on your own, but Inside Tracker makes their results easy to understand and even provides tips on how to use food first for optimal nutrition. Right now, Inside Tracker is offering my podcast community 25% off their system. Just go to insidetracker.com/Drew. That's DHRU to get your discount code and try it out for yourself. That's Inside Tracker, INSIDE Tracker, TRACKER.com/Drew, DHRU for your 25% off. Hi, everyone. Drew Perowit here. If we want to continue to learn how to optimize our health, we have to stay open to new information, and sometimes that information might contradict previous research and question the status quo. Questioning the role of fluoride in the usage of dental health is a great example of this. Fluoride gained support due to an observation one man made many, many years ago, which has progressed into many cities fluoridating their water and most dentists singing its praises. But over the years, the research on fluoride has greatly evolved to the point that we can now see large differences in how it works topically versus internally and identify the risks that come with the consumption and the overuse of fluoride in our water systems. In today's mini episode, I speak with Dr. Mark Brehenna and Dr. Stephen Lin, two incredible dentists that are my friends, about the emerging research that supports the connection between fluoride and, get this, IQ changes in the brain, neurotoxicity, arthritis, osteosarcomas, and changes in metabolism, among other concerns. They also go into the root causes of cavities. Newsflash, it's not a deficiency in fluoride, but the sugary and starchy foods making up the standard American diet and an altered oral microbiome. Let's listen in, starting with Dr. Mark Brehenna, a functional dentist and the author of the number one Amazon bestseller, The 8-Hour Sleep Paradox. For the people that are listening here with a skeptical ear or an interested ear, like, well, okay, yeah, I mean, I know that fluoride has been used. I didn't really think of it too much. I want to hear about just a couple of these studies. You know, let's pick one category here, and maybe one of the most fascinating studies that you came across where you really started to see that these hunches and ideas that you had 30 years ago, which I consider that, you know, it sounds like there was a, you know, there weren't maybe the level of studies that there are today. There may not have been really hardly much at all at the time, but you were listening to voices that were out there. Could be in the medical community, could be environmental activists or sort of health advocates. And you were taking what we think of today as sort of the precautionary principle, you know, kind of like the European approach, the precautionary principle, right, which is, okay, if there's no clear data at the moment, until this thing is actually proven safe and not just from an observational way, I'm going to weigh the pros and cons and say, maybe I actually don't need this right now, right? So that was 32 years ago. Now, a lot of that information has been backed up. So give us one study that you could start off with that really demonstrates maybe we need to rethink this addition to the water.
Lots of studies. The big ones, the ones that are making big news right now, and there is a lawsuit against the CDC or EPA that is hopefully will be decided upon soon. I mean, the judge has gotten all his information. I followed the lawsuit. It was here in San Francisco. It was fascinating. It happened during the COVID era last year. And, you know, it's funny, it really didn't make the news. No one really knows about this study. This, and it's a landmark study, a lawsuit. This is a landmark lawsuit. This is the first time that citizens have been able to sue at this level via the Toxic Substance Control Act, the CDC and the EPA. And that's where all the studies have been presented. So the EPA really had very little to say. I mean, they actually hired, ironically, they hired the people, not the people, but the scientists, the white lab coats that they were fighting against with the tobacco industry. So the irony is there, they hired these renta lab coats, and all their job is just to dismiss the information, to show the loopholes in the study, and that was their best defense. And later, if you want, I can read some of the depositions from CDC oral health director and how he basically had nothing to say. I mean, they don't have enough data to support and to refute the studies that essentially, if you are drinking fluoridated water, if you're a mom, if you're pregnant, if your infant is drinking water or getting formula being made with fluoridated water, then the IQ of your child will drop by between five and nine points. It depends on the study. Now,
which is huge. I mean, just to compare that, there's not many things that are even
huge, but
Oh, go ahead, please. Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people, and I have to admit, you know, I had to do a little research first. It didn't seem like that much to me, but you're absolutely right. It is a huge drop in points. And if you look at the bell curve of IQ in the States and you shift that over, you know, given those 5 to 9 points, there's a 57% increase in that category of children of an IQ with less than 70, a 57% increase. Just with that 5 to 7, 5 to 9 points, it depends on the study. So these studies, there are 64 of them. They're all extremely well done. There are a few that are extremely well done and have great pedigree. One's done the BASH-HASH study in 2017. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. That was done by a company, a group of professionals that have done 50 studies on neurotoxicity and epigenetics and exposure to children. They've done lead. They've done, you know, just about air pollution. There's another one, arsenic in the water. And they were interested. They've seen all the other studies. So they did a wonderfully double blind, very well controlled. They took out alcoholics. They took out, the big items are alcoholics, poor health, complications in pregnancy, tea drinkers, and their findings were exactly the same as all the other studies, that there is a significant and easily recognizable drop in IQ points. So, I mean, that's neurotoxicity. How does that happen? What is the mechanism? There are all sorts of ideas on that. But it's amazing that we haven't really talked about this over the last 50 years, as long as we've had fluoridation. And back when I was a young dentist, there was talk of a reduction in IQ, but there were no studies supporting it. So there are effects on the brain.
At that time, when you were a young dentist, where were you hearing these sort of contrarian ideas? Who are they? Were they public health advocates? Were they, folks from the concerned citizens? Like who are the people that you were hearing from back then, if you remember?
Right. And I do. And they were not professionals. They were not PhDs or scientists or physicians, which is who we're hearing it from now, researchers. It was just kind of a reaction to the politics of putting something in the water that everyone is exposed to and everyone's forced to drink. And again, this was before the internet. So this was all just word of mouth. And maybe there was some articles in the newspaper, but I ignored all that because, you know, these were the same people that were saying it was a communist plot. The Russians were controlling our weather. It was the Cold War. I mean, it was nuts, just like things are now, right? but I just ignored all that. And I just said, listen, you know, I just don't know enough about fluoride to expose my kids to it. I have fluorosis, Drew. I grew up in San Francisco. I don't remember if I had the tablets or not, but I did drink the water, and I have a type 1 fluorosis, which is the lowest level of it. It basically exhibits itself by little white spots, like little pearlescent spots on the teeth, and that is a form of fluorosis. I probably got too much fluoride. The other effects on the brain, let's answer that question.
And while you get ready for that next portion, which is the other effects of the brain, I want to mention that the lawsuit that you were referring to earlier, it's a gentleman, I don't know how to pronounce his name properly, but I looked it up before the interview, Dr. Grandjean, yes. Philippi Grandjean. He's from the Harvard Chan School of Public Health. And he was the plaintiff that was coming in against the CDC saying that there is genuine concern. So for the folks that are listening, it's not just off the beaten path, functional medicine doctors and folks that are what could be considered the health and wellness and a podcast community. There are people, again, with really top-notch pedigree, Harvard's Chan School of Public Health, which is a top school, we're saying, listen, no matter how long we have been used to this thing, we have to be willing to question it as the research grows. And he was the one that I believe was leading it. And I didn't see much about it either. The only people that I saw when you and I were preparing for it is the Environmental Working Group. You know, they covered it a little bit and I had to look up some of their information. My business partner, Dr. Mark Hyman, he's on the board, but we were kind of all caught up in the sort of pandemic drama And it was just one of those things that didn't really float up on the radar at the time.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's too bad, but I think we'll be hearing more about this. I think we are reaching a turning point. But here's a list of neurological brain development issues. So we've talked about the reduction in IQ. It also has an effect on the pineal gland. And the pineal gland, of course, is key in producing melatonin, which affects our sleep, our circadian rhythms. And again, remember when I said earlier, if a cell in your body needs calcium, and that's pretty much all cells, and it sees fluoride, it's going to grab the fluoride first, because the fluoride is more, for the lack of a better word, it's more magnetic. It's more attracted to make that union. And calcium gets forgotten. So you have to be okay with the fact that fluoride now is doing the work that calcium was supposed to be doing in a cell, in a mitochondria, for example, or in any cell. And so pineal gland calcification, we're seeing a lot more of that. That's on the increase since we've been fluoridating our water. A thyroid function, there's there's been a lot of research on that. That's already 10, 15 years old, that research. Arthritis, joints, you're more likely to get arthritis. It damages bone and an increase in hip fracture. That's something I heard back in dental school, but now we have studies that discuss that. Bone cancer. It also damages the human male sperm. It's a cause of infertility. That's on the rise as well. And that's a big issue.
Incredibly on the rise. Big New York Times article that came out just this week talking about how infertility rates, lower sperm counts. We've been knowing it's been going on for a while, but now it's at a level where even very mainstream people are like, something is up. And it's not just stress, although stress seems to be playing a major role in it.
Right.
And how sort of families are coping and the changing nature of sort of work and feeling kind of like comfortable in life economically, but major concern.
Yep. There are a lot of studies now that are examining the link between fluoride as an epigenetic factor. And we know that Alzheimer's is mostly epigenetic. There are some genetic, you know, predispositions to it. But that, you know, with the potential role of fluoride in the pathogenesis of Alzheimer's disease. And there's a study, I'm looking at it right now, 2018. It's out of, looks like it's out of Europe. Essentially, it says that the brain affects cellular energy and metabolism, synthesis of inflammatory factors, neurotransmitter metabolism, microglial activation, that's what heals the brain every night, the expression of proteins involved in neuronal maturation. And there are links now between fluoride and ADHD. So fluoride definitely has an effect on the brain. I mean, we're seeing it pop up now constantly with all sorts of studies that are agreeing with the other study. Some of the studies aren't perfect. Some of the studies, most of the studies are excellent, and they're all coming out with the same data. This is no coincidence.
My next guest, Dr. Stephen Lin, a world-leading authority in the field of functional dentistry and the author of The Dental Diet, The Surprising Link Between Your Teeth, Real Food, and Life-Changing Natural Health. Dr. Lin and I dive deep into the topic of tooth decay and how it's a condition that we can prevent, and more importantly, if we start early, we can actually potentially heal cavities that we have. Let's listen in. So complete that theory of what you know now contributes to the tooth decay.
Yeah, it's a very disparate picture, and it actually speaks to how we disconnect the, you know, oral medicine with systemic medicine. And so the evidences that we understand with diseases in the mouth, they are very disparate from what medical doctors are treating patients with systemic issues. And so that problem starts to, it really disseminates through society. And then so you have the functional medicine community that looks at root causes and starts to think about why lifestyle, habits and diet and so forth, affect and cause chronic diseases. But dental diseases are very much the same, and they're actually connected. And so when you start to look into how functional medicine and how, understanding nutrient deficiencies and so forth begin to play into, what we see in the mouth, it all starts to paint together. And so it actually goes back to another older text, which I based my first book on, Weston A. Price. And he went around the world and he he looked at what happened with traditional diets and what happens with modern decay. And he found that as soon as we move ourselves off traditional diets, we begin to see dental diseases. This happens in the anthropological records, and it happens in modern populations as well. This was in the 30s that he was doing this. And so what he did was he looked at the differences in foods, and he found that there was a specific lack in fat-soluble vitamins that arose which caused the rise in decay. So up to 30%, which is the modern rates that we see decay, and they're going up now, once we remove these factors from our diet. And so what he was talking about here was vitamin D and the fat-soluble vitamins. And what we've learned in the last 20 to 30 years is that vitamin D that we absorb through sunlight, but we also get from food, is a primary manager of minerals in the body, so calcium specifically. And it's how we absorb calcium. So when we're vitamin D deficient, we don't absorb calcium in the digestive system. So you can eat as many foods as you like with calcium. So, proteins, plant-based foods with calcium, if you don't have vitamin D, you won't absorb it. It'll fall straight out of you. And then it's the management of these minerals, so calcium itself, how it gets into your bones and teeth. Now, vitamin D is a hormone regulator. It regulates our DNA. And so what we now know is that there are thousands of cells all over the body that are listening, that have vitamin D receptors, and that are listening to the vitamin D in our body. And so when we're vitamin D deficient, we have an overall message to strip minerals. And this is kind of just the surface level as to how our diet, how our vitamins, and how our endocrine system manages the nutrient balances in the teeth. And recently, so in the last 10 years, what really kind of opened my mind to this was what we're understanding about the microbiology of plaque. So we mentioned before that plaque and calcium interact. So the reason why you get that calcified plaque built up on the back of your lower teeth that your dentist cleans off. Now, there isn't a good physiological explanation for that. So the dental community says it's due to poor oral hygiene, but actually it's due to the body not managing calcium. And we know that there are proteins in the mouth that carry calcium into bones and teeth. And so these are fat soluble vitamins that work synergistically with vitamin D. And when vitamin D absorbs calcium, it needs these other nutrients, which is vitamin K2, to carry calcium into bones and teeth. And so what the studies actually show is that tooth decay is actually a deficiency in calcium in the mouth. It's not actually just the stickiness of plaque on teeth or the overproduction of acid from certain bacteria in the mouth. It's actually the lack of calcium. And so what bacteria will do is they move into teeth to strip the minerals, which is what tooth enamel is. It's frozen minerals, calcium, phosphate, and the bacteria actually need this. Calcium is involved in every physiological process in our body, muscle reactions, cell reactions, brain reactions, and bacteria need it as well. So we're actually seeing an imbalance in the way our body is moving minerals around.
But if somebody today was noticing that they went to the dentist office and they were noticing that they're starting to get a little decay, maybe not like a full blown decay, I don't know the proper terminology in dentistry, but there's a little bit of decay that's starting to build up on a tooth that's there. Would you still recommend following your protocol? If so, can you walk us through that? And it's so personalized, but as a whole, do you think this is something that could still potentially help them reverse this decay?
Yeah. So when you go to the dentist and you have an oral examination where they take x-rays and they'll do an intraoral exam, if they identify a lesion, what you'll be able to identify is the depth of the lesion. So that's how we generally class, the severity of decay. So if the what happens is you get a shadowing on the x-ray. And so if that shadowing stays in the enamel, that's generally called a class one, the class two lesion. These lesions can be remineralized. So that means it's not broken. You may not even notice it's there, but the dentist will pick it up. Now, in these cases, I mean, we know these, and so what the conventional dental treatment of that would be, it was to put topical fluoride on that. And the issue with fluoride is that it will harden the enamel, but it won't necessarily change the underlying issue that caused the decay. So if you have a lesion in enamel, you can very much, you know, be of the mindset that this can be remineralized or reversed. If it's into the dentine, now you're getting to the zone where the decay is getting closer to the nerve, and there becomes risk that if you just leave it, you can get an infection of the nerve. And so you really kind of have to work with your dentist in that sense and understand the risks and so forth, and, you know, make those decisions. But if you have an enamel or an early dentine lesion, there may be, you know, a zone where you can, you know, enact some lifestyle change to see. And what you can do is you can go back in 3 to 6 months, take new x-rays and check if the lesion is remineralized, because you'll see this on the x-rays. They'll actually increase their radio opacity or their whiteness on the x-ray. And if it's remineralized, and you can put them side by side. So you want to work with the dentist with this, because without that, you don't have any feedback. You just don't know what's happening. But so all the factors that we're starting to talk about. So where, if you have this lesion, you need to be thinking deficiency. I think, you know, across the board, my patients that have tooth decay, I recommend they go and get a vitamin D deficiency test. And so this checks your blood levels of vitamin D. Now, the issue is that there's a lot of detail with blood levels of vitamin D. You know, you can have sufficient levels and sometimes that doesn't work, or some people have low levels and it takes a long time for them to lift up. Supplementation, we remember that supplementation needs to be activated into its active form in the body. So the version of vitamin D you take via supplement form has to be activated again. And then that's the version that activates all the gene receptors throughout the body for vitamin D. So supplements are it's one aspect to this, but knowing your vitamin D levels when we have a lesion is very important. And then we can supplement alongside, but then dietary, you know, we need to replace these foods. And so foods like rich in fat soluble vitamins, such as cod liver oil, if you can take a desiccated liver capsule, you know, for people that aren't going to go out there and cook liver themselves, you can take a desiccated liver capsule and, you know, take 4 to 6 of them a day with cod liver oil. And then you can test your vitamin D levels to see if they're lifting up after 3 to 6 months. And then within that, you know, if you're getting x-rays on the lesion, we can start to see if we're seeing some changes in the enamel. Other factors to think about: vitamin K2, which comes in same as organ meats. If you eat these foods, you're going to get a broad spectrum of these nutrients. You can also supplement K2. It comes in two forms, the menaquinone 4, which is the animal sourced one, and the menaquinone 7. The menaquinone 4, which is the animal source, is more active in the body, and the menaquinone 7 comes from fermented foods like sauerkraut and other vegetable ferments and so forth, some dairy too. So you can supplement both of those forms too. If you take a D3 supplement, you should always take a K2 supplement. And one of the things that people, you know, not many people are talking about now is vitamin A. So you get vitamin A with cod liver oil, but vitamin D deficiency also, vitamin A and vitamin D work together. And so if you have an increase in vitamin D, it increases the need for vitamin A in the body. So if you take a vitamin D supplement, we should really be thinking vitamin A as well. And you can get these from natural food sources like organ meats, but you can also supplement as well. And so these things work together. And then the thing that catalyzes all these nutrients are magnesium. Magnesium is a mineral that we don't talk about. It's actually within the tooth structure as well. So you need to be getting a lot of magnesium for all of these nutrients to work. And if you take enough vitamin D, but you're magnesium deficient, it won't work. And so magnesium itself is a mineral that sits along the outside of the structure of the calcium phosphate tooth mineral. And if you're magnesium deficient, your vitamin D receptors won't work. The kidneys will actually remove more minerals from your body because we're deficient in these in calcium and phosphate and magnesium. And so you have to get a lot of magnesium. So I think, you know, today, because of the way food quality is stripped out, we don't get enough magnesium than what we used to. So soil's quality has gone down. So people supplementing vitamin D, K2A, and magnesium makes a lot of sense in terms of making sure that you're getting enough of these nutrients. And then, you know, making sure you test, you know, you can test your D levels, you know, check your symptoms with magnesium. Sometimes you can get, you know, digestive symptoms, like you can get where your stools become quite loose and so forth. You know, you can titrate that depending on your symptoms. And then things like ferments, so like oral probiotics, so things like kefir, things like fermented vegetables. These things replenish the oral bacteria, and we want to be replenishing the oral environment in order for it to be able to regenerate. And the other thing that we talked about before is that bone, before bone is made, it's a collagen matrix. So the body lays down amino acids, and then it calcifies those amino acids. So for tooth structure to remineralize, you need collagen amino acids. And these come in foods like bone broth, from the joints of animals, from the skin, from you can take a collagen supplement, but I think it's really important if you're trying to remineralize some cavities in your mouth, you need that precursor for bone. Otherwise, your body's going to be trying to pull these amino acids where you're in deficiency. So when you put these things together and you take you know, regular interval x-rays, you can potentially manage lesion. You may see certain lesions remineralized. You can take photos of them. A dentist will often get intraoral photographs of them. And so it's possible. It does happen, but you have to be very careful. You have to you know, understand all the different risks and know that if a lesion goes too far, you can get quite a bad toothache that can end up in an infection.
It's an exciting time because of all the science around how influential both our diets and our lifestyles are, and even how we breathe at night and their impact on not just our overall health, but more specifically in this case, our mouths and our dental health. Thanks for tuning into this week's mini episode of the Drew Pruitt Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you again next week.